Good afternoon, everybody. Am I audible till the end? So am I being audible? Okay. So my name is Bharata. I work for IBM's Linux Technology Center in Bangalore in India. So today I've come here to share some of the experiences and results we have had while working on scheduler optimizations for modern multi-core systems. Specifically, I'll be looking at some of the better task placement opportunities that exist in Linux for MC architectures. So in this work of mine, there are other two colleagues who have assisted me greatly, Srivatsa and Vaidyanathan. So three of us are together working on this project. And one of the things I want to say is this is kind of an experimental work which we have been doing for past few months. And we haven't gone out with the patches yet to the open source. Still, we have the patches in the experimental format. We hope to clean them up and post them soon to the community. And here's the agenda for today's discussion I have. We will start by looking at some of the characteristics of modern platforms, which would help us to understand the opportunities that exist in the operating system scheduler for better task placement. Then we will look at the changes we have introduced to the scheduler to arrive at this optimal task placement. Then I'll be following it up with the results we have had. So let's quickly get started by looking at some of the basics of this multi-core platform. I'm sure most of you are, probably all of you are familiar with this. So what I have shown here is a block diagram, a very generic block diagram of a multi-core system. I have shown one chip here, so you can have multiple chips within a system like this. What we have here is two cores within a chip. It's a dual core system, and within each core we have two sibling threads. So essentially, from the application point of view, this is a four CPU system, dual core and four threads, two within each core. So one of the terminologies I want to introduce here, because I would be using it very frequently in the subsequent slides. We have this core, right? Within the core, we have two sibling threads. So two sibling threads within a core, I call it a sibling domain. And we have two cores within a package, and I call it a cache domain, for the reason that both these cores share a common L3 cache. I'm sure you are all familiar with the CPU caches, right? L1 cache, L2 cache, L3 cache, etc. If you're not, let me, for the want of time, if not needed, I won't go into details of all these. So what we are seeing here is some amount of sharing of various resources within the package. So if you see, the sibling threads share a lot of execution units within the core, CPU execution units, and they also share some cache units like L1 and L2, or rather exclusively make use of them within that core. And at the core level, you have this last level cache, L3, being shared by two different cores. So here is one concrete example of such architecture. We have taken Power 5 and Power 6. What I want to stress here is, in Power 5, you can see L2. L2 is being shared actually between two cores. And in Power 6, L3 is being shared. So depending on the architecture, you can have, it all depends upon the architecture. I mean, what I want to say here is some level of cache ends up getting shared between two cores. So as you can see, execution units are shared and cache is being shared within this system. There's a reason why sharing is done, actually. If you look at shared caches, typically sharing is beneficial in the sense that if you look at real world workloads, you will find a lot of workloads which benefit or which work on shared data sets and hence benefit from having shared caches. So, and another thing is, if you have a shared cache and lot of or more number of cores sharing that particular cache, you will end up having contention on the shared resources. But you also have this private per chip or per core or per CPU private caches, which somewhat mitigate the resource contention on the shared caches. So if you look at modern architectures, you will have some sort of balance between private and shared caches. So and oftentimes, this shared cache is a result of some sort of trade-off between chip design complexity and the benefit of having private per CPU private cache. So traditionally or generally, it is observed or accepted that it's a good thing to have shared cache in a system like this. Of course, it is good. But what we have seen and or what we have observed is we have observed both sides of the story. Basically, it can be good for some workloads, while it can be not so good for a different set of workloads. So we are going to see both of these scenarios. To illustrate actually how good the sharing can be, we chose this benchmark called cache-to-cache benchmark or C2C benchmark, which essentially measures the data transfer rate between a producer and a consumer thread. So what you can do is you can run this producer and consumer threads on two different cache domains. Cache domain means a set of cores sharing a cache. So if you have two cache domains in your system, if you run this producer and consumer in two different cache domains, you can essentially measure the cache-to-cache transfer latency. So if you look at the second row here, the numbers have given for Intel Xeon quad-core machine. You can see that if I run the producer and the consumer thread of C2C bench within a same cache domain, you can see 6.5-fold increase in the data transfer rate as compared to running them in different cache domain. So this is kind of suggests the kind of cache-to-cache transfer latency involved if you are putting producer and consumer in two different cache domains. Is that clear? This is kind of crux of the problem which you are trying to solve, actually. Yeah. It actually measures data transfer rate ultimately. So we are saying it is kind of representative of the cost involved in cache-to-cache data transfer. It's not exactly latency, but it's a representative measure of the cost. Yep. And this is another side of the story, actually, to illustrate how bad sharing can be for different workloads. What we have chosen this benchmark called eBusy. This is again a publicly available benchmark, which kind of simulates web application server workloads. And if I remember correctly, I think this was actually written to kind of reproduce or simulate a problem that happened in a large enterprise e-business kind of company. So what eBusy does is it's a very memory-intensive, multi-threaded, memory-intensive benchmark. And it puts a lot of pressure on the cache, and it does a lot of memory allocations and freeing. And the throughput of this benchmark can be measured as records per second, which says how many records it was able to successfully process. So what we have done here is we have taken such four instances of eBusy, single thread instances, and what we did was in the best case scenario, we ran each of the instances in a different cache domain so that none of these eBusy instances were actually sharing any of their cache with other tasks running in the system. So this was the throughput. The blue bars indicate the throughput we obtained, the best case scenario. And next time, we ran the same experiment, but what we did was we put all these instances within a single cache domain so that you have a lot of contention on the shared cache present in the cache domain. And you can see the drastic reduction in the output as shown by the pink bars. So almost it's like 166% reduction. So this is like best and worst case scenario. One of the things we know about eBusy is it's very cache intensive. It needs a lot of memory. It actually benefits from having large amounts of cache because it does a lot of memory allocation and freeing. So, and what it does, it actually processes the records that are put in the memory and gives this records per second as the throughput. So essentially, it advantages to have most of the memory into the cache. Uh, and it is it's not a it's a very if you see this application, I'll show the results later. Actually, I'll characterize the application and show some of the results. But what essentially EBZ is, it suffers a, or rather, if you run it with another cache-hungry application, it ends up seeing a lot of cache misses. Okay, so let's look at this problem from scheduler point of view, actually. So here, again, a representation of a multi-core system. We have 2x2 dual core package here, and two cores in a package having shared L2. And what we have here are four tasks, T1 through T4. And the length of these colored bars indicate the kind of memory hungriness or the cache demand put forth by these four tasks. So you can see that T1 and T2 are very cache intensive applications, and T2 and T4 are kind of not, and they're, you can say, CPU hungry tasks, which don't put so much of pressure on cache memory. So if you run these four tasks, the default scheduler can end up placing these tasks in this manner, actually. T1 and T2 can end up on package one, and the other two on the package, on the second package. So you can see here a lot of contention on the shared resource, and here you can see underutilization. So ideally, this is what we would like to have in such a scenario, where you have this division, cache intensive and not so cache intensive tasks grouped separately into two different cache domains, and optimal use of cache resource. So what we are saying is, Linux scheduler mostly places tasks to distribute load equally between cores, and what we are seeing is there exists an opportunity to do better task placement if we actually analyze tasks' resource usage characteristics, and that's what we are going to do. Okay, any more questions, concerns till now? Because from here, I'm going to explain the changes to the scheduler we have done to obtain this better task placement. So we looked at multi-core architectures. We saw the shared resources part of it, the benefits, and the other side of the story, optimal task placement, suboptimal, and we'll continue looking at the changes we have made to the scheduler to arrive at this optimal task placement scenario. So one of the things, whatever changes actually we introduce into the scheduler to get this optimal task placement, it should actually arrive at this optimal task combination at runtime, by which I mean that we shouldn't be actually providing any hints to the operating system through system administrator or the programmer. And the second point is, it should actually work on the externally observed nature of the task, which means that it shouldn't be disruptive. It shouldn't change the application's behavior. And finally, it should respond to the changes in the task's characteristics. So as an example, you might have a task which might be CPU hungry for the first half of its run, and it can suddenly change its characteristic and turn to a memory hungry application for the next half. So your whatever change or the algorithm you introduce should be able to detect this change and take corrective action accordingly. And another big concern we had was to honor the other goals of the scheduler, the fairness goals and the power savings goals. We shouldn't be going, whatever changes we introduce should honor these. We shouldn't go against those. If we want to represent task placement optimization of the scheduler in some sort of a diagram, we can actually show them as part of, show them as a stack like this. So it can be stacked as layers like this, and the last colored layer is our addition here. So if you look at the top layer, that is the power optimization layer. So what it does is, let's say we have n tasks to run in the system. It will actually look at these n tasks and decide, depending on my power savings policy, how many CPUs I need to keep active to run this n number of tasks. And let's say it says I need m CPUs. So rest of the CPUs present in the system can be put to sleep or idle mode, basically to save power. So that's the job of power optimization layer. Next, this fairness optimization layer kicks in and says, okay, I have m CPUs and I have n tasks. So how many of them I run in each of these CPUs so that all of them get fair amount of CPU to run. So that's the job of the fair optimization layer. Typically, it can be like m by n, number of CPUs by number of tasks. That's where the current scheduler stops. And what we are saying here is we can have another optimization called contention optimization layer, which can actually decide, given that I have to place n by m tasks on each of the CPUs, how do I choose each of these CPUs and in what combination should I place? That is based on the resource usage characteristics of the tasks. So what I need now is to actually do some sort of workload characterization and figure out what's the nature of these tasks. That will help me to place them accordingly. So what we are saying is we would characterize tasks in two ways. We would either characterize them as CPU hungry or memory hungry. So one of the things we say is like if the task is encountering a lot of cache misses, or if its cache miss rate is high, we would say it's a memory hungry task. And if it sees a high instruction retrieval rate, we would say, or if it is like able to complete large number of instructions per cycle, we would say it would be classified as a CPU hungry task. I know that's a very simplistic assumption. As I said, it's an experimental work. We are going with this model and we are experimenting to see what are the kind of benefits we would get from this. So in order to calculate these rates, we needed some inputs from the performance counters, particularly these three performance counters: cache misses, instructions retired, and cycles. So what we did was, we did not have to do a lot of changes within the scheduler to get this performance data for all the tasks. We have this perf subsystem, which was recently introduced into the kernel, which is capable of providing per task performance counter metrics. We just had to tweak in a little bit so that we are able to drive that subsystem from the scheduler and have the performance counters active for all the tasks that are running in the system. So typically, the perf system by itself is driven from user space, typically, where as a user space tool would request kernel to enable some performance counters on a given set of tasks. But we are coming from the other side saying that from the scheduler, we say we need performance counters on all the tasks. That would help us to characterize those tasks. In addition to the primary performance counter metrics, performance counter metrics, we actually derive these two metrics, CPU demand and memory demand, for each of the tasks that are running in the system. So essentially, CPU demand is like instructions by cycle, and memory demand is cache misses by cycle. It's like IPC and cache miss rate, actually. So for every task, we keep this value up to date. What do we do is we continuously measure and update these demand metrics for all the tasks over their lifetime. Okay, so those were per task metrics. Three of them were primary performance counter metrics, and two of them were derived metrics. And we needed another metric, actually, per domain. So per cache domain, we needed this CPU pressure metric. What it means is it's a sum of all the CPU demands. You have this sibling domain and cache domain, right? For each of the sibling domain, you define CPU demand metric. For each of the cache domain, you define memory pressure metric. So for sibling domain, when I say the memory, for sibling domain, I have CPU demand metric, which is sum of all the CPU demands, which is sum of the CPU demands of all the tasks running in the sibling domain. So if in the earlier diagram, I had two sibling domains, right, within core 0 and core 1. So if there are four tasks that are present in the run queue of core 0, then sum of all the CPU demands of those four tasks will be represented as a CPU pressure on that particular core or on that particular sibling domain. Similarly, we have this memory pressure metric per cache domain. So CPU demand metric, CPU pressure metric is for sibling domain, memory pressure metric is for cache domain, which is essentially sum of the memory demands of all the tasks in the cache domain. Actually, the final change which we introduced into the scheduler was pretty simple. What we tried to do was we had all the data available. We had characterized all the tasks. We had we know whether it is memory hungry or cache hungry. And we had per domain metrics like CPU pressure and memory pressure. Finally, what we had to do was to try to equalize these metrics between domains. So if I had like four cache domains, the scheduler would try to maintain equal cache pressure across all the domains. Similarly, equal memory pressure across all the sibling domains. That was the core change we had to make, very simple one. This slide actually explains the implementation part of it, what essentially we did. Not sure it would be of that interest, actually. If enough interest is there, we can actually take it offline. So it's just about, since the it's just essential to understand what is the change we are doing. We are trying to just equalize the memory pressure and the CPU pressure between the domains. Any doubts till now before we move into the results section? Was I too fast, actually? I was like kind of concerned about the time we had. Is it sinking in? I mean, do you want me to like?
So you only pull tasks. You never push a task. You only pull tasks. You never push tasks.
Yeah, we pull tasks. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Given that essentially most modern multi-core systems are NUMA of some description these days, how do you factor in the memory locality aspect into your scheduling?
Not yet, actually.
Right.
We are just dealing with the cache domains within a node.
Just cache, yep.
Yeah. We need to. Yep.
Well, the use of control groups to sublimit the system cause skewing in these numbers?
Use of control groups would cause...
skewing, in that you can have some very active tasks causing skewed numbers for a subset of the environment.
But we are not using control groups here, so why do you say control... you are saying, are you using control groups to do that? No, actually. There have been attempts earlier which we have tried. We had tried this co-scheduling approach where you pass hints to the scheduler externally, saying that here are a set of tasks which I need to be treated as a group, and they need to be co-scheduled together as far as possible. For that, we were using control groups to actually represent that particular co-schedule domain. Not here. Any more questions? Okay, I'll quickly run through some results we have obtained with this experimental work of ours. So first, what we did was we took a 2x2 quad-core machine, Intel Xeon quad-core, which had 8 cores distributed into 4 cache domains, 2 CPUs per cache domain. And we ran 4 single-thread EBZ instances along with 8 CPU hawks. So essentially, we had 12 tasks running on a 8 CPU machine. 4 of them were memory hungry, and 8 of them were not. So when we measured the throughput, in the first case, I got the coloring wrong, actually. Yeah. I didn't observe all this while. Okay, the first case, first is the case where you do without memory pressure balancing, which means you just allow them to run as per the default scheduler, and the blue bars indicate the kind of throughput EBZ throws out for this. And in the second case, what we do is we turn on this memory pressure-based balancing and see the output. You can see substantial increase in throughput of EBZ for first 3 instances and not for the 4th. It can so happen that sometimes default, you can get lucky with default scheduler and it can place the tasks properly for you. So not guaranteed every time. So this is the output here. Next I have a series of graphs actually to show the memory pressure variation between 4 domains we have in this system. So in the upper graph, we see the memory pressure, how the memory pressure varies as this benchmark threads run. So if you see that it is like varying around 35,000 or something. So with memory pressure balancing, it kind of remains close to 50,000. So this is for one cache domain which had CPUs numbered 0 and 2. So similarly for all others, if you can see this second domain which had CPUs 1 and 5, it probably ended up having in both the CPUs EBC threads running. So it had high amount of memory pressure, close to around 450,000 or something. So after balancing, it has come down to between like 50 and 30. Actually, this is for next domain, and this is for another domain. This is the same graph is represented differently here. What we have done is the blue line indicates the average of the memory pressures of all the four domains. And the gray lines indicate the standard deviation either ways. So this is without memory pressure balancing, and look at this with memory pressure balancing. So this is just to ascertain that we got the algorithm right, basically, to make sure that the algorithm indeed is doing what we were thinking, which is keeping the memory pressure constant across all the domains. And this is, yeah. Here?
Yeah.
I think it's a settlement time. You just start all of them suddenly, it will take some time to actually stabilize and come to. Yeah. It'll take some time to characterize the task and. So, same experiment, different number of threads. One more data without patches. And we are just comparing, like, are we introducing any kind of overhead by having the patches themselves? So again, the last third bar in every column shows the improvement in the EBC throughput with memory pressure balancing. This is again on the same machine, actually, Intel Xeon quad core. Next result we have is from SpecCPU, which is a set of CPU intensive or compute intensive benchmarks, actually. So what we did was we chose two particular benchmarks from this SpecCPU set. One of them was VPR, one of them and the other one is GZIP. So we choose two of them, and this experiment was done on a 2x2 dual core machine which had two cache domains, two CPUs in each of them. First, we benchmarked the results against the ideal case, which is the correct binding, which is the blue color one, dark blue one, the first one, which is, and all the results are normalized against that particular one. So correct binding means we have these two cache domains. VPR benchmarks are very cache intensive, and GZIP ones are not. So what we did was we took one VPR, one GZIP, put them in first cache domain, another VPR, another GZIP, and put them into a different cache domain. So this is the ideal scenario. We manually bound them in that particular manner. And if the result is one, normalized result is one for that. In the next case, what we did was intentionally bound them wrong, basically. We put both VPRs and both GZIPs separately into different cache domains. And it hardly made a difference to GZIP, actually, if you see the pink ones. But if you look at the throughput of VPR, you can see the results or the score, VPR score, came down by 10% if you do this wrong binding, because it suffers a lot because of the shared contention on the shared cache, we believe. And in the third case, we allowed default scheduler to do whatever it wanted. Again, no change with GZIP results, but VPR, it gets a 10% reduction in the output. So final case we have is with memory pressure balancing, which kind of gets back the 10% regression which was seen with incorrect binding and which was seen with the default scheduler. Does this make sense, this set of graphs? Okay, another concern we had was how good it would be to actually use performance counters from within the scheduler on all the tasks that are running in the system. Maybe people would frown at us saying, like, what you are running performance counters from scheduler? Go away or something. So we set out to measure the overhead we are having with this. So what we did was we chose this Kernbench benchmark, which is, again, a CPU throughput intensive. And it actually measures the time taken to compile a kernel, and it can compile kernel in by using various concurrent jobs. Actually, it runs make minus J416, or it does parallel compilation. So what we saw is a slight, of course, we are doing so much of things with performance counter, you are bound to have some effect. So slight increase in system time, user time, and elapsed time is there. But I think it is still okay for the kind of things we are doing with performance counters inside the scheduler. This is half load run on 8 CPU machine, minus J4. This is make minus J32, and this is optimal load run. This is max load run. All of them show similar results, actually, though there is slight a slight increase in the time, but not, I would say, not significant. Your opinion might vary. Yep. This particular benchmark, it remains the same. It doesn't hurt, but it doesn't benefit. So, as I said in the beginning, it is a very experimental kind of work. What we have been able to show is some proof of concept saying that there exists an opportunity for better task placement in multi-core systems. And we need to actually do a lot of refinement to the work which we have done till now. And certainly, we are not working very well with the existing load balancer. In one of the slides I skipped, which had this implementation details, I had details where you had per CPU load balancer threads I would run to actually do memory pressure based balancing. That probably is not such a good thing to have. So we need to work well with the existing load balancer, and we need to actually try this out for various kinds of workloads and see whether we get benefit for most workloads and how workloads fare with respect to such a change. And finally, I showed results only for memory pressure-based balancing. We have not touched CPU pressure-based balancing. That's one of the things that is remaining. So we want to see how the same kind of results for CPU-intensive benchmarks. So these are the references for the benchmarks we have used. Okay, that's it. I finished quite early. I should have. Could have gone a bit slow, I guess.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
We have about 13 minutes left for questions,
yeah.
if anybody needs to. Just wait for the microphone so that the streaming users can hear your questions.
You mentioned CPU load-based.
Yeah.
How hard will it be to extend it to that?
How hard it would be, you're asking?
Yeah, how hard
CPU pressure-based balancing?
You're talking about execution units or
yeah,
TLB?
It wouldn't be hard to extend, but we have to see. I mean, we are not... theoretically, we should see improvements. By actually not clubbing two CPU-intensive tasks into a same domain, so same sibling domain. So theoretically, we believe it will hurt if you have very high CPU-intensive jobs running on sibling threads. We need to actually experiment and see. It wouldn't be too hard to, we have the infrastructure ready, which already gives you per domain CPU pressure metric. All it needs to be done is to actually pull them and distribute them equally.
Because yeah, obviously with SMT, you've got a lot more shared resources in there. So being able to extend it to that would potentially be useful.
Yeah, we are hopeful that it would bring some benefit actually. We need to try out.
When you have a multi-threaded program that uses shared memory, one cache may have dirtied some memory and have a dirty line in the cache, and another thread might want access to that cache line. This will cause a cache miss that may or may not go to physical memory, but anyway, the data will have to come between two caches. In that case, you're getting a cache miss, where it would be more optimal to put both tasks within the same cache domain to prevent that cache miss.
So you have a multi-threaded application which are running. You are saying they are benefiting out of shared cache, right? I mean, that's the scenario you explained.
Yeah.
And you have a data brought into cache from one of the threads, and another thread wants to use the same data, right?
Yeah.
So essentially, it's a different set of it's a kind of workload which benefits from shared caches. We are talking about workloads which don't benefit. So.
Yeah, I'd imagine on a general system, you'd have to handle both kinds of workloads.
Yeah, we have to handle both kind of workloads. One of the things we believe is if you're not able to improve throughput, it shouldn't hurt. So you shouldn't actually disturb that situation where we have an opportunity to do co-scheduling and pull out some task from it and put into another cache domain so that you end up incurring a lot of cache misses. So that shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, so basically I understand. The point is there are certain workloads which benefit from co-scheduling. The point is what we are thinking is if you might not be able to actually improve their throughput, but you shouldn't hurt them. You shouldn't hurt co-scheduling opportunities.
Over the last few years, there's been a lot of work published about using performance counters for multi-core scheduling from the point of view of thermal management, from the point of view of performance management and so forth. How does your work fit into that spectrum of previous work?
Actually, we did a little bit of literature survey. We even tried to implement one of the things. They were all using performance counters. I can't remember which university had this paper, and they had done it for Power5, and they had seen some improvement with Spec CPU. We tried to do the same, but we did not find that much of improvement, and that was one particular example, and there were a couple of others, but this was one case where we actually tried out whatever the paper said and didn't find good results.
How do your patches currently interact with using perf just from on the processors normally? Can you still use perf on things you're trying to profile?
With my patches running?
Yeah.
Okay, if I understand the question, you are asking, I have a system with my patches running. Can you still use perf on them?
Correct.
Ideally, you should be able to, but obviously when you're doing such massive changes, there'll be problems and you'll end up in crashes. So right now, as I said, it's an experimental work. To be honest with you, when I have my patches running, perf doesn't work. It gets confused, and we have not, because the intention was different, basically to show the benefits. When we actually work towards posting to the community, we will take care of those finer aspects where you have a task. You have a task which is running, which has taken up 3 performance counters already from the kernel point of view. So you have that many less number of counters for the perf subsystem itself. We need to take care of that. Okay, thanks for your time.
Thank you. On behalf of LCA 2010, I'd like to present this speaker's gift, and we hope you enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, by the way, I don't drink wine. It's up for grabs, actually.